Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There was a mass exodus.
There was. I was part of it.
Leaving. Yeah.
I went to New Jersey.
You went to New Jersey. Yeah.
No offense, by the way.
We love Jersey. We love Jersey.
Place. I've had a wonderful 2 years.
Yeah. Let's be my rants and gems. Let's be my rants and gems. Y'all can do it. We discover. He's doing the kings and the queens. Word the mother lie. Today's episode is sponsored by Emporia Energy, an energy management technology company with a goal of saving you money on your energy costs. They do this by giving consumers new insights into their usage and helping them automate and control usage to be as efficient as possible. Emporia Energy team has over 25 years of experience in the energy business and understands the role technology was playing in energy management, and their mission is to save their consumers money while creating a healthier planet. So guys, make sure you tap in with the Emporia management team over at EmporiaEnergy.com. All right, guys. So look, I'm excited about today's episode. We are here in New York. First of all, shout out to What the F Media Studio. Shout out to Weezy and the whole crew for holding us down. I'm super excited to be home filming Rants and Gems. And oh, it's God. Only right, Kiana, that we talk about the New York real estate market today.
I'm excited to hear about the New York real estate market. You know, now that I'm in New York every single day filming Rants and Gems, and he refuses to come back to Atlanta.
I'm not going back to Wakanda, y'all.
I feel like I need to know more about this market in case I want to invest here or buy me a second property, because, whoo, these bills are getting high. So listen, Alyssa.
Yes. Hi. Look, guys, so we brought on our girl, Alyssa Brody, to the show. What's going on, Alyssa?
Thank you guys for having me. Very, very excited.
Always a pleasure.
Go ahead, Kate. Listen, so I just want to talk to you. Let's just jump right into
okay.
it. Like, the U.S. is having the tendency of becoming much less affordable due to high property prices and also high demand. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing right now in the New York real estate market, specifically Brooklyn and the areas that you service?
Yeah, so I have been working in the Manhattan and Brooklyn market for the past 10 years. And we are definitely in one of the more exciting cycles.
Exciting.
I mean, look.
I like the way you said that.
I'm a pretty positive person. We're going to have like a positive spin on things. But it is exciting because we were in a down market for a while. So it's always nice. Like, things are cycles. So it's always nice when the cycle starts to change. Rents are astronomical. That is, you know, I believe that no one expected the bounce back from the shutdown as fast and as strong as it's been. And even with all the mobility out of Manhattan, the comeback was so fast and so aggressive that it's just kind of been piling up. So rents are through the roof, and that's just because there's absolutely no supply.
Wow. Mm. So the rental market is lacking supply along with people trying to buy homes as well.
Yeah, I think that the market's being really pushed on both sides. The reality is that if you are purchasing something right now, you're either going to be buying two asset types, a resale, which is somebody who's selling their property, or a new development. And let's say 2018, 2019, there was a huge influx of supply, specifically in the new development world. And so that oversaturation, what we're seeing now is the absorption of those units that had been, you know, marketed or sold in 2018 and 2019, mm-hmm. and that's being absorbed. And then on the resale side, I feel that so many people put their homes on the market post-COVID because they had moved or whatnot, that there's also very little product right now in the resale side. So you're seeing this return of bidding wars, mm-hmm. and then, you know, the truth of the matter is that there is not much new development planned. There's not much being planned right now. So you have a new administration. You have a 421A that the 421A, you know, is done right now.
Explain that to the people who don't know what a 421A is.
Yeah, it's a little like, I guess like in the most basic terms, a 421A was a tax incentive where developers would have a really a tax break, let's say for 15 or 10 or 25 years based on some kind of affordable housing component that they would have to develop into the project. Mm-hmm. So it made the land acquisition a lot more affordable. So that's how you saw, let's say in Brooklyn, the Williamsburg waterfront was transformed through the 421A. And that one was one of the most extensive 421A. So that was a 25-year 421A.
Wow.
And so you were able, you saw a lot of condos come up and then you saw a lot of rentals. And so it really does assist developers. And it has, you know, in some ways, whatever, we're not going to get into whether negative connotation, everyone has their opinion on it,
yeah.
But it does assist in development and movement. And right now that is sunsetted. So we have, we're going to be at a standstill. It's very, very expensive at the time right now to acquire. Now couple that in with construction costs are through the roof. It's on average 35% more expensive to build right now than it's ever been.
And New York City is already expensive to build.
Yeah, correct. So I'm actually married to a developer.
Good for you, honey. Shout out to Eric.
Eric Brody. So development and real estate is our entire lives. Like this is, you know, we're landlords, we are developers, we're owners, we're operators, we're marketers. So I'm seeing it across the board. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens because now interest rates are rising.
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to happen? Do you think it's going to be some sort of crash because of what's happening right now?
No, I actually believe that the market is going to sustain its pace for the next 18 to 24 months. I think we're going to continue to see rents go up. I think that we're going to see that anyone who wants to purchase will be purchasing. Yeah. New developments do still have a percentage of negotiability. You're looking on average, you know, maybe around like 5 to 6%, which is still good. I mean, it's not like nothing, right? It's what's interesting is that it's very much location driven though.
Mm.
You know, the developments that are in locations that are a little bit more challenging or let's say got a little rougher during
COVID
mm-hmm. because yeah. it did, you know, like areas like the Lower East Side has a lot of new developments. I have a project there myself, and while they're beautiful and they're incredible and they're well priced, location is still a factor for people in terms of desirability and then pricing.
Mm. Okay.
Those are still two really relevant factors in the success of a sale and the success of a market. But I think the rentals are still going to be pushing because when the market slows down for the buyers because of high interest rates and affordability becomes a factor, mm-hmm. the market has to adjust itself. And during that adjustment period, I think that you're going to see rents continue to push.
So while we're talking about rents, can we also talk about the purchase price? Like I'm, you know, in Atlanta or like where I'm from, Georgia, everybody's buying. Most people renting is a smaller market. I know it's yeah. a larger market here in New York, but what about those that are looking to purchase, you know, in New York and surrounding boroughs. You see, I said it right. Boroughs, not
yeah.
cities.
Yeah.
with the median, see, I'm getting it.
Yeah,
together.
You're good.
No, with the median price being that has risen to like 10.7%, what do you foresee in the purchase market as well?
Yeah, in the purchase market, I feel like it really, the resale market is different because it really is opinion based on the broker pricing and then also what the seller wants. And you kind of always have that like struggle. So listings that are priced right at the market for the appetite. And at the end of the day, buyers set the market. Okay.
Of course.
Like I don't Absolutely. Care about anybody else. Buyers set the pricing. If you price it right there in that sweet spot, you will sell quickly and you're likely to go over ask. Okay. If you even price it slightly above, you will sit. It's a very interesting balance right now. Mm-hmm. The last time I saw this market was like 2015, mm-hmm. where like bidding wars were a thing. But bidding wars are created. It's an artificial creation by brokers.
We know what we're doing.
Absolutely.
You
know? Absolutely.
So you know how to price something to bid if you really want that. And you can create one if you'd like, if that's your end goal. But I do think that the townhouse market saw probably one of the biggest influxes in pricing, and there's not a lot of inventory in the Brownstone Brooklyn area, which saw the most desirability during the post-pandemic opening of our market. I think that's what it's very, I think that's more on the level of maybe like in Georgia or more suburban areas.
Right. Okay. So Brooklyn is considered suburban here?
No. But Brownstone, Brownstone's
compared to like single family.
Yeah, like are more comparable to single family in terms of an asset class.
Okay.
And then
I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. And then the condos and the co-ops, you know, there's different areas. I think that the Upper East Side saw a lot of movement. There's still some new developments, you know, in Harlem. My husband has one. I'm going to plug it, the Huxley.
It's
a great opportunity. You can still purchase in a brand new condo development for reasonable prices, unreasonable by Manhattan standards. Don't come at me, okay? I know that $750 is not reasonable for a one bedroom, but it is here for a new development.
That was going to be my question.
For New York.
Like, what's the price
for
New York. Right. Yeah, $750 not bad for a one bed.
No, and, you know, there's, I'm selling on Roosevelt Island, which is considered Manhattan. And our average price per foot is around $850 to $900, which is extremely reasonable. So you're looking at a three bedroom for 1.5. So if you're willing to look outside of your most desirable locations, I think that there's still great opportunity.
I love that. Location adjacent.
Location, location, location.
Right.
So like Roosevelt Island, right? Because I've been to that project. Actually, me and Tooks came there when you first got that development, right?
That is a little gem. Everyone's sleeping on that project.
Let's talk about that real quick because you broke records over there, right?
Yeah, I've broken every record on that. I mean, it's crazy. We were talking about this, like, you know, luxury broker and it's sexy. But it's the most unsexy product. It's my number one selling product. We have actually sold at this point 15 units, all at asking. The sponsor will not negotiate anything. No concessions. No, and we've been able to bump up our pricing from Schedule A at least 25 to 30%, maybe more.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and there's still value. It's on the waterfront. There's a lot of ways that you can get there. So transportation's easy. We're finding that a lot of people coming from the Midwest actually relocating. A lot of working professionals love the island and we're selling a lot to them. It's across from all the, you know, all the big doctors. So it's right across 56th Street. So we're seeing a lot of doctors in the medical community react well. And it's where Weill Cornell is. So it's a really interesting project. And I'm really
beautiful
grateful.
Apartments.
Beautiful, beautiful interiors. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're getting the same stone in your bathroom as you're getting right across the way where they're selling for $2,400 a foot.
Oh, wow.
So let me ask you.
Beautiful.
I'm sorry. Let me ask you. With COVID, right? Because there was a mass exodus.
There was. I was part of it.
Leaving. Yeah.
I went to New Jersey.
You went to New Jersey. Yeah. You moved
no
from
offense,
the city.
By the way.
We love Jersey. We love Jersey.
Beautiful place. I've had a wonderful 2 years.
Yeah. But it's a mass exodus. Correct. Now that New York City is now reopening, you know, the city is trying to get its heartbeat back, right?
Yeah.
Got a new administration.
That's
you know, they're trying to really put things back together, give New York back the vibe. Do you think there's going to be an influx of folks like yourself who moved out of the city during COVID now coming back now that the city's reopening?
So you got Miami coming into this mix. And I'm excited to talk about that because I actually was born and raised there. And for the first time, there is a synchronicity between Miami market and New York.
Okay.
So the Miami market was always predominantly South American. Like that was reality. That's who bought new condos. That's who bought pied-à-terres there. The South American market, Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela, you know, Brazil, Argentina. That's what was the Miami new development market. And so COVID and New Yorkers, let's be real, you guys all used to shit. Can I say shit on this?
Yeah, of course. Talk your shit.
Everyone would shit on Miami. I remember I was in law school, I was 22 years old and I had moved here. And mind you, my nickname in law school was Miami because it was so rare that somebody who is Hispanic and from Miami was in this, actually down the street, New York Law School. And so I would go down there for like December break and everyone's like, oh, you're going to Miami. Like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So New Yorkers got a little taste of how good it is in Miami. And obviously the politics and the restaurants and everything else that happened. Once that happened in that shift, and me, myself, and a lot of my friends, I think that you're going to have people that stay there permanently, but the upper echelons of wealth, which is what really truly drives the Manhattan market, is going to have both places no matter what. They're not going to give up Miami anymore. Mm. And so I think that's what's going to be really interesting.
Miami's a whole vibe.
It's So I think New York for the, again, you know, the upper market, the luxury market, is going to be more pied-à-terre driven in New York, and they'll go back and forth. But I think that Manhattan in the normal, the normal market, let's say, in 3 years, you'll see that come back. Okay. I don't think it's there yet. And I think that it's going to be a lot of supply. And it's also a lot of, most people are still doing this remote, kind of hybrid work. So
absolutely,
if you don't have to be here,
why be here?
Why are you going to be here? You want to be here. So I think people are doing the back and forth. Like, look, I do back and forth. I'm on a plane every week right now, and I love it. And that's because Manhattan is not 100%. I have enough business here, but I'm also seeing opportunity there. And I think that everyone's kind of seen that in all sectors of industry and life. And so that's an unprecedented variable that we haven't had to our cycle, a market like Miami.
Yeah, Miami is different.
Yeah, Miami is very different. And even speaking of Miami, like we're looking at Miami, they've had the Miami apartment rents have increased 58%.
Stupid. It's stupid.
Right? And then
what I'm paying now all of a sudden for a rental there, like I can't believe it.
And it's crazy, right? In comparison to like what else, everywhere else in the world is 19%. So now that you're doing more business in Miami, you know, and that I'm hearing that some companies in New York are paying rent for their employees here a full year here in New York
to come back.
Yeah. So, you know, what do you feel like is going to happen in the Florida market when it has an estimated of 27,487 people experiencing homelessness there? So we are kind of seeing now we're kind of getting into like the LA kind of market a little bit.
The
like
have and have nots.
And it's going crazy now that you're kind of selling in there. Tell us a little bit about the Miami market and what you're doing.
Well, look, I'm happy you brought that up because I grew up in Miami in a very different way than my children are going to be growing up in Miami. And that's because I am a first generation, you know, my family's immigrants from Cuba. So, you know, we all know that story. Yeah. It's great. But, so I'm seeing it firsthand, right? Because my family is still there. A lot of my family and my friends, the people that I grew up there. And I feel like what Miami is going through is what, let's say, New York, certain areas of New York went through, like Williamsburg. So I'm going to say the dirty word that no one wants to say, which is gentrification. Mm-hmm. Okay. It has to adjust. And I feel like that is what is going to be happening in Miami. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I'm not seeing that's different is that in New York, the administrations, because of the politics, are very cognizant of working with developers to ensure that there is inclusionary housing. I know that's also pisses people off when they say it's affordable because it's not, but it's at least some form of integration, okay?
Okay.
What happens in areas like, or what happens, you've seen it, like even Detroit, okay? Happened in Detroit.
Yeah.
Is what happens is that it gets completely pushed out a certain class of people, and then it creates like sub neighborhoods. And then it's the, like in Manhattan, the extremely wealthy areas versus the not so extremely wealthy areas.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Miami being such a young city, because it is a really, really young city. And I think it's like one of the youngest cities in the United States, they're going to have to go through that adjustment. And it's going to be a very difficult adjustment. And it's going to take the administrations working with developers and they don't have any 421A or any of these tax incentives. I think that they're going to have to get creative.
Absolutely.
In figuring out how to do that. Because Miami, the way that it works is the closer you get to the inner city, so the highways, the poorer it gets. The further you get away from the coast, further away, so to the west or the east, the nicer it gets, essentially.
Closer to the coast.
Exactly.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
But then you have areas like Wynwood, which are fascinating.
Yeah, Wynwood is...
Wynwood's doing it right. Yeah. See, Wynwood is an area that... And I think what the reason why is because Wynwood first started with rentals. When you start with rentals, you can create a community, I think, a lot more organically.
Okay.
The reason I say that is because typically when you underwrite for a rental, you're going to purchase the rentals probably that were there first. The probably reason they did rentals is because they knew there wasn't a condo market there. So rental buildings create neighborhoods, in my opinion. That's why I love when my husband does them, because rentals bring retail and retail bring people. And then once a neighborhood is formed, then you see condos come in.
Yes.
Whereas like in Miami, like the beach areas that were always condos and like always luxury, you don't need that cycle. But when you have like a young kid come in and they're able to rent at first at like, you know, affordable-ish rents, like a young professional, and then they're able to save and they're able to see that neighborhood transform, they are the first to then buy in that neighborhood and they create a neighborhood.
Mm.
So that's why I feel that like multifamily developers going into these neighborhoods, and there's a lot now that were, you know, potentially, you know, maybe more impoverished neighborhoods, maybe more immigrant-based neighborhoods. If they start finding this sweet spot like New York did with this, like, you know, inclusionary 30-70 mix of buildings, it would be really fascinating to see what happens.
So what do you think about, because every time I go to Miami, it's just cranes everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. It's cranes. Everywhere. It's development.
They're developing.
And it's been like that for years. And back in the day when the Great Recession happened, there was an influx of inventory in Miami and in South Florida, right? Do you foresee that happening again in Miami? Because I don't see nowhere else building like they are in South Florida. Like, it's absolutely insane. And the price is up and stuck.
Yeah.
From price to rentals to everything. So what are your thoughts on the Miami real estate market, you know, in the, let's just say 18, 24 months? Your opinion, I know it's a little speculative.
Yeah, of course. Okay, just your opinion. I took a recent position, which I can't talk about yet, in the Florida market. So it puts me there head first. And one of the concerns I did have is like, okay, I'm going to up my life and I'm going to do this, like, is this market going to take a shit on me? And then I'm going to just have to run back to New York, which is fine because I have my company here and I'm established here. But taking your kids back and forth is daunting, okay? Your kids have lived everywhere and nowhere in the last 5 years. So, but again, I think COVID changed everything because we're talking about only Miami, New York, but there's other cities like in California. Mm-hmm. With huge migrations to Florida. So I think you have so many other places that are looking there now and moving that I think they can hedge against it a little bit. And they're saying that at this point, it's still not even enough housing for the migration that they're seeing.
Okay.
Yes.
And a lot of these companies have just announced that they're moving. So they haven't even started to move yet.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I don't foresee it's going to happen anytime soon. And to put it in perspective for you guys, an uber luxury development in Manhattan is a 2,500 to 3,500 a foot product. Right now, the St. Regis Brickell, which is being represented by One Sotheby's, they just launched. It's an amazing product. It's one of the first St. Regis without a hotel component. So it's like basically, you know, private St. Regis to yourself. You know, their blend right now is about 1,300 a foot, and they're happy with that. That's a luxury product.
Mm. Yes.
I mean, they obviously have in that unit mix upwards of, you know, 18 and more than that. But saying the blend, you're talking about 1,300, 1,400, 1,500 a foot blends.
That's like half the
price. 1,500 a foot is luxury there. It's, you know, those are, and they're big.
Yeah.
And, but on a price point, it's $6 million. In Manhattan,
that's like 60 million.
That product can be right. So,
yes.
I mean, that's what I think that Miami can hedge itself, because even if people wanted to move back to New York full time, it's still affordable enough for certain class of people to have both. And then the product that's being absorbed by normal buyers,
yes,
is again affordable. Like a family like mine can go into that market mm-hmm. and purchase something quite comfortably. Where here we would have to spend upwards of $3-5 million for the same lifestyle.
Yeah.
So it's still affordable, and we know that you're
affordable.
No
one yeah. thinking of
affordable. Affordable compared to New York.
Yeah, I live in too. Miami, and New York is a very big bubble. I know that.
Yeah.
And the one thing about it is, like, you represent developments, but at the heart of it, you're a real estate agent, right?
Yeah.
And while you're out here negotiating these contracts, and you know, I know that you work great in the Manhattan market. And we were talking a little bit offline. Like, what are your tips for people that are looking to buy in this market? And I have to ask the number one question, are you just a luxury buyer agent? That's all you do is work with luxury?
Hell no. Okay, I work with everybody. I work with anybody. The truth is, thank God I have a team. Mm-hmm. My team has expanded and grown a lot in the last year. And I really love working with younger agents, rookie agents sometimes, even because I feel like I'm grateful that I have produced enough opportunities to kind of give it a little bit to everybody. Mm-hmm. So no, I mean, from 300,000 to 30 million, that's literally the range of business that I've done over the last 10 years. So no, we do everything. The tips I would have, and I say this to all of my buyers, first time buyers are my favorite. Mm-hmm. That comes just from, I think, like my legal background. I love to educate and walk them through the process. There's so many nuances in Manhattan to get through. So I always say, like, find a broker that is going to be your advisor and your advocate, because you're going to be with that. You're going to be telling people that you tell them the most intimate details of your life. Absolutely. So find somebody that you actually want to kick it with, that you find like to be, you know, credible, somebody that you know is going to have your back through the process. And that could be a rookie agent. You don't need to go find somebody that has 10 years experience. You know, you can just find somebody that you mesh well with. Get pre-approved, you know, mortgage broker.
Got to get pre-approved.
Understand the big picture and what it's going to cost you going into that transaction and going out of that transaction. And then be prepared to be disappointed, because it's Manhattan. So be prepared to be disappointed. Like, I'm sorry. Like, be prepared to have to compromise. Be prepared to lose deals. Be prepared to be maybe rejected by a co-op board. Like, just get ready.
I think that's across the board. That's throughout the United States.
Right. I don't know. I'm assuming, but like, just be like mentally prepared. It's an experience.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, losing an offer and then losing another one and then losing another
one.
It
might happen.
It becomes mentally draining for the client and for you.
Yeah.
Because you're like I'm trying to keep you encouraged, but you can start seeing where they're just like, they're like shutting down, right? Slowly but surely. You're like, no, it's okay. Come back. Come back. This is the market. Prepare for the market.
Correct. Exactly.
And I still think that, and this is just my thoughts, even when it comes to the Miami market. Now, like, not too much New York. I feel like New York, y'all are so expensive now. I just can't see how much more expensive you can get.
Oh, it's going to be up and stop.
But when it comes to, like, investing, it's like, it is still a good time to, like, purchase in these markets. Like, every property is an investment, even if you're a first-time buyer. So even if you're, like you're about to dominate and take over the Miami market, it may be in comparison to some. But it's like, if you come in now, you could see these price per square foot get up too close to Manhattan prices when it's time for you to kind of your exit strategy, right?
Look, at this point, I feel like you can make the best educated guesses based on past experiences. But I do feel that like we are all just under assumption, because the last 2 years have been wild in most markets and they've been unprecedented. You have a lot of unknown variables. I mean, look, crypto. Let's talk about crypto.
Listen, I'm glad you spoke about crypto.
That what it's doing also to pricing and to the market, and like, that's crazy, right? Like, you can work through with FTX, you can have crypto, you can convert it to US dollar, you can buy a home. Like, that's a factor we've never, ever
seen. Are you seeing more of that now in the Manhattan market?
Miami.
In Miami.
So Manhattan is actually not yet, like, you know, the regulations here.
Yeah.
Like, actually, I spoke to my FTX guy because I wanted to get one of my projects here associated with the crypto wallet. I'm like, it's perfect. Like, this is the right product for, you know, that type of demographic market. And they're actually not approved yet to transact here. But in Miami, you are. And I just, Diesel Wynwood is another project that I'm, you know, I have the privilege of being working on. And it's also being represented by One Sotheby's. And they, just did their first deal in crypto, and it is a price per square foot record breaker. It's two units. It's going to be fully in crypto. You know, they go into contract this week. You know how that is.
Yeah.
Maybe today we're going to manifest. Yeah. But you saw that a lot. Like, you know, the Waldorf Astoria in Miami, when they associated with crypto, saw something like 60% of their, like, 60 new deals come through the door
All being paid by crypto.
Right, by crypto. So it's another factor we've never seen before. And they have money. It's deep pockets. It's young money. It's new money. And they need to put it in an asset that's tangible, right?
Absolutely.
Because crypto, anything could happen. I don't really know that world as far as I know it is what I'm speaking of. And I don't pretend to know things I'm not an expert in.
You're like,
But that, I mean, you know, we have a lot of political strife in our country. We have a lot of political strife, you know, in the European countries right now, you know? So we just came out of a pandemic that no one had ever experienced. So I just think that it's we're all making a lot of assumptions and educated guesses, and that's great.
Right.
Thanks to a lot of digital tools, including some that I've created, you can track data a lot better, so you can analyze what's going to happen. You can make better assumptions. But honestly, I don't think anyone could answer your question.
So, and I'm glad you said that. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, because we're probably going to say the same thing.
I just want to know more about what you've created. Real estate has been so boring. Real estate is always brick and mortar, buy, sell. But now it's becoming more tech business. And we talk in crypto, and now it's about tech. And you have just created something. I think it's phenomenal. You told me offline. I want you to share that. And,
talk about that. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in the 5-minute spiel, basically, in specializing in new development, I always felt that the process was extremely fragmented by many parties. So my partner, Erica, and I have a philosophy of an integrated sales and marketing approach. We've married both of them because we believe that the sales efforts should be supported by the marketing, and the marketing should be kind of assisting in the sales process and the initiatives. And you're able to do that now with the use of digital channels and digital lead gen. So my partner is a data scientist. So we have created a process and a philosophy in which we create the marketing materials based on analytic data that we collect from something called an LCP, which is a lead capture page. We also have created something called social listening and just different tools that we can use to assist the developer from pre-development planning all the way through sales and marketing. And given that the new development cycles are so long, typically when you would start a project, you would go to a marketing agency or content creator and they'd create like this beautiful fluffy package. And then your sales team would have to use that for the lifestyle of the project. You didn't know if it was speaking the language to the, you know, end user. Like, they never asked the question as like, who is my buyer, right? Because they were ad agencies. Like, they were just hired to make a beautiful logo. And so what we did in integrating it is we create our content based on who our buyer is, and we're able to ascertain who our buyer is by using data. I don't need to guess. We created a system where, like, if my developer wants to do something as even choose between a light floor or a dark floor before he puts them in, I could beta test that on the internet using my data partnerships that I have and actually analyze for him. And so the assumptions—
kind of do like a poll or survey.
Correct.
No, I actually run ads and track people's—
You're tracking their activity.
Activity and the clicking on the ads. Exactly. Yeah. And then I can basically ascertain who my target demographic is and make sure that I'm on point. And then I can run a variation of 27 different ads with different messaging and find out which messaging is actually speaking to my target audience. And so what that does is creates a really beautiful, cohesive marketing plan that then actually supports the sales team. And we're finding that what is done is creating warm leads that are coming through the door, ready to transact faster and with less negotiability. Because the reality is that through digital channels, our buyers are doing their research way ahead of time. So what we do is create algorithms where we're able to influence that buyer's decision through nurture channels and through emails and through really specific marketing tools and tactics to help that and nurture and influence that decision a little bit.
You know
bit
what
better.
I feel like yeah, you're that's doing? Crazy. And in my thoughts, like I like even like when you have like these online courses and these online training and they create these funnels and these back end funnels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you have this huge advertising and marketing company. Like I met with one for my online training and it's like looking at the analytics, looking at the data, correct. Like mm-hmm. you're taking real estate, which used to be just present the product and sell it. And now you're actually treating it like it's a product that can be shifted yeah. and changed
yeah. and it
to
can.
Just kind of go to, and you can find the right buyer.
Right.
It's amazing because it was yeah, in fire. Front of our face for other industries.
Yeah.
And you're bringing it
we
to
get upsold
real estate
every
industry.
Day.
Listen, every I'm day. Excited.
Literally, like,
I want to be the first one
know,
to get it.
I'm a millennial. And I saw what the fashion influencers did. You know, like yes. I was on Instagram in 2012 in the beginning and I saw and a few years ago, like that's why I created, and now I know everyone has a brand on social media, but he'll tell you I was one of yeah. the first to create the brands because yeah. I saw the ability to do that, you know, and to create a product for yourself in a virtual network. And we've just taken it a step further every single year. And I'm really proud of what we've built. And, you know, on the back end, we've created a CRM. We can track every marketing dollar. We watch hours of video to see how people interact on our sites. Like, it's really wild, the process, and I'm very excited about it. And I'm very proud to say I'm on the forefront of changing the way that new development marketing is done. And it's not just vanity clicks, you know, and
oh,
not
no.
just to like, yeah. I don't give a shit if I have a million followers. I actually, if it works, because it effectuates a sale. That's
yes.
what
it's all about
the follow marketing
like
should
it can't,
do.
It can't
it's
go,
all about
don't
monetization.
Don't just like it and just don't come look at this product.
Yeah. Right.
Write a contract and transact.
Right. And so
absolutely.
It helps my agents. And that's always what I'm always
okay.
looking to
okay.
do.
You know, I have to plug.
Agent.
I have to plug yeah. Atlanta.
We're going to plug y'all in so yes. for the software and everything like that. But let's leave the audience with
sorry,
one
guys.
More last gem. The last gem for new agents looking in to get into development.
Yes.
Give them a quick tip, a quick gem, because most people want to get into the New York, the luxury areas, right? Especially working with developers and big scale projects like this, $20, $30, $50 million sellouts, right?
Find five people in your network, no matter what they're in or what their level is doing. And the five people, have them funnel you business from different asset classes and diversify your portfolio so you can find out your niche. Uh-huh. Because new development is a whole different animal in a world. And don't be scared. Don't be intimidated. Go into different markets and find your special area or not. Be a jack of all trades. And honestly, that's okay too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I love that. Tell them how to find you.
At Alyssa Soto Brody on Instagram is the best way.
All right, guys. So make sure y'all tap in with our girl, Alyssa Brody, man. She's killing the New York and Miami real estate market. This was an amazing conversation, Kiana.
Absolutely. It was an amazing conversation. And really, it's so inspiring to talk to an agent that was like, girl, I have sold 300,000 to yeah. 30 million. And now, you know, she has her husband. But on top of that, she's representing developers and she has her own software.
Absolutely.
And that's something that we need to talk about from a position of value when you're working with developer clients. So I think that it was an incredible episode. And agents that are trying to get to that next level, you're going to enjoy this one.
Absolutely. So make sure y'all tap in with Alyssa, like, comment, share, subscribe, review, all that good stuff. Let's make Rants and Gems the number one real estate podcast in the world. This is Matt Garland, NMLS number 58700, but better known as MG the Mortgage Guy.
And I'm Kiana Watson, broker extraordinaire. Just a little plug. I will be getting the software first in Atlanta. I'm from the Alyssa Brody. License number 317576. Thank you guys for tuning in to another incredible episode of the Rants and Gems Show.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.